Thank you. Thank you so much. Of course, thank you for the invitation and the organisation. Thank you for the opportunity also to learn a lot from each other, which I'm enjoying quite a bit. And yes, today I will speak about the organisation of mental dilemmas. The focus of the talk is slightly different from the sort of abstract in that I'm not going to say a lot about what is actually my area of specialty, which is terrorism studies, but I will sort of concentrate on the more conceptual side of what resentment is, how many types of resentments do we have, and how do we bring together mimetic theory, literature from political philosophy, social psychology, and psychoanalysis. The reason why I'm focusing on this kind of emotion of resentment is because, well, we're all aware that it's been very much a concern of our time. In a recent post on the cultural site, Doppio Zero, literary critic Marco Bertolucci has defined resentment as the dominant mood of our age. More and more often, he states, individuals feel a sense of animosity towards others, towards the world in general, that stems from a perceived wrong, an offence, an affront, a frustration, a misrecognition, which the individual has or has perceived to have suffered. A growing culture and a growing politics of resentment has been stigmatized fairly recently as an enabling cause of many recent social and political developments, including Brexit in the UK, with of course the discourse about resentment against immigrants, resentment against Europe, and of course even more recently the election of the new president of the United States, with a lot of talk about racial resentments, resentments in terms of economic justice, and not least the resentment vis-à-vis the prospect of having a woman as a president as well. So it's a mood that is very much sort of, you know, in the current zeitgeist, and the reflections that I'm presenting today are about resentment, and in particular the question of whether resentment has gone global, whether this mood, this emotion, can really be defined as dominant in the affective, moral, and political economy of our age, and with what consequences. So I will first situate this emotion in Girard's mimetic theory, and then compare that with both classical and contemporary philosophical reflections about the link between this particular emotion and politics, as well as some references to psychoanalytic themes and literature, to propose a distinction, essentially, between different types of resentment, and then some conclusive remarks on which round of resentment I think is becoming really global. Resentment has a bad name and a long history. It is one of those negative emotions, such as anger, rancor, and rage, that are ordinarily considered not only corrosive of human relationships, but detrimental on a collective and political scale to civic compassion and social order, as Martha Nussbaum has argued amongst others. There's a long tradition in Western political thought, stretching from Grotius to Norbert Elias, that has long attached a stigma to this emotion, considering them primarily as destructive forces to be contained by reason or transcended through charity. Peter Sloterdijk recently stated in Rage and Time, a psychopolitical investigation, that the thymotic history of humankind, in which rage and resentment feature so prominently, has been forgotten due in no small part to the full and complete fixation, what he argues is a full and complete fixation, of psychoanalysis on eros rather than thymos. Recently, however, an acknowledgement has gradually formed according to which, rather than being enemies of social and political causes, negative emotions play a fundamental role in society and politics. We have seen, for instance, the rise of popular discontent and protests across much of the globe with movements such as the indignados, the indignated, channeling the power of rage, indignation, etc. In the context of the recent affected turn in social and political theory, negative emotions are undergoing a rethink and a sort of revision. For instance, anger has been recently rediscovered as, quote, an essential political emotion, drawing on the classical Aristotelian view of anger as a useful and morally justifiable affect. A number of scholars have urged to reinstate its moral political value.
closely related to anger, akin to indignation, and yet never far from rage, resentment has also been defined as a moral feeling that derives from the sense of being unfairly treated. In Theory of Justice, John Rawls considered resentment as both different from and more important than anger as a political and moral emotion. While anger can arise independently of situations of injustice, resentment always invokes a concept of right and the existence of a moral grievance. While we may feel indignation towards the wrongs we perceive to have been done to others, resentment concerns wrongs that we perceive as our own, because they are directed to us. However, although recognizing the value of resentment, Rawls is also quick to point out that this emotion can acquire perverse and destructive forms. Envy, in other words, can easily masquerade as resentment, just as resentment can easily slip into rancor and bitterness and turn into what is better known as ressentiment. As we all know, probably, resentment is also a central emotion in Girard's mimetic theory. Girard's insight about the essentially free-floating and unattached nature of desire means that desire is always according to the other, a desire not intrinsically generated but acquired or relinquished by imitation or mimesis. The importance of models becomes particularly significant when such mimesis is frustrated, when it is clear that every attempt to rise to the perceived stature of the model or acquire the desired object ends up in failure. Thus, the mimetic nature of desire, and in particular the so-called obstacle addiction, necessarily sort of engender resentment. Rivalry and envy, already normally present in human relations given their inevitably mimetic nature, seem to have escalated out of proportion precisely in late modernity. The triumph of the very operating principles of liberal and capitalist societies, namely equality and the market, and their competitive effects, are now amplified on a global scale. Furthermore, immanence and the loss of any transcendental points of reference consign humanity to give up its normative horizons and live and fight its battles mimetically, which means, according to Girard, violently. There are no so-called transcendental banks, in the words of Sloterdijk, where you deposit deferred projects of resentment or rage under a sacred or divine canopy. So everything happens imminently. And if all these conditions are present, well, these can only multiply and operate on occasions for comparisons and envy, which in turn create resentment. And of course, this is further escalated by the fact that the promise of equality and wealth is frustrated by the reality of inequality and structural imbalance that is often simply denied. So in Girard's own words, we live in a world where many people, rightly or wrongly, feel blocked, paralyzed in all aspirations, obstructed from achieving their most legitimate goals. Individual psychology inevitably ends up presenting this permanent frustration, and the need arises for a term that expresses the state of affairs. The word ressentiment seems designed to play its role. Naturally, as some of Girard's scholars have amply illustrated, this view resonates very closely with that of Nietzsche and Max Scheler readings of ressentiment. In fact, the origin of ressentiment, according to Max Scheler, lies in particular in envy. In the envy that derives from comparing oneself to others and resenting one's inferiority. And I quote, "Envy is the strongest source of ressentiment. It is as if it whispers continually, I can forgive Avery everything, but not that you are, what you are, that I am not what you are, indeed, that I am not you." Ressentiment, therefore, is the affect that underpins the construction of scapegoats, the exercise of revenge, the affirmation of a negative or inverted form of enjoyment. For the subject experiencing ressentiment, enjoyment comes more from the misfortune of others than an increase in one's own well-being. Imposing one's suffering on others through revenge therefore becomes a way of actualizing one's negative enjoyment. There's a lot of psychoanalytic theory from this Canterpur to through Slavoj Žižek and through Melanie Klein as well, that certainly would agree that envy is at the heart of resentment, and that if we look at the etiology of resentment, we're sort of brought back to envy, understood as Klein does, as an expression of the death instinct. However, my argument is that there's also another story to resentment, and one that we don't find in Girard. This story links resentment not so much to envy, but rather to shame and wounding. And I would argue that if we can say properly that all envy causes resentment, I would say that not all resentment is caused by envy. In fact, in classical and contemporary philosophy, resentment has been, at times, given a virtuous rather than a vicious face when it indicates a legitimate response to a perceived injustice. Not all resentment, in other words, is a sentiment. In this positive incarnation, resentment is the guardian of justice, in the words of Adam Smith. According to classical political philosophy, resentment is not only an appropriate individual response to failures of justice, but it is also an indispensable attitude to cultivate if an overall degree of fairness is to be maintained in society. The 18th century Presbyterian theologian Joseph Butler considered resentment as an indispensable weapon whose function is to prevent and remedy injury and the miseries arising from it. Considering this sentiment in the context of other moral virtues such as charity and compassion, Butler concluded that resentment is needed precisely to allow injustices to be acknowledged and injuries to be punished, rather than merely forgotten or forgiven. In some circumstances, therefore, resentment is morally superior to charity. In his theory of moral sentiments, Adam Smith painted a similar positive picture of resentment. According to Smith, resentment functions as a necessary corrective to imbalances of justice, and as that reparative mechanism which restores society to a state of harmony and fairness. Once restrained and tempered of any of its excesses, resentment becomes that noble and generous feeling of indignation that inspires the sympathetic recognition of others and transforms a community of strangers into a community of moral agents bound by the same nomos. What is judged detrimental, if not wholly questionable, is thus not the place of resentment within the moral order, but the prejudice against negative emotions and the overriding fixation to foreclosure that places society at fault when it prevents them from acknowledging and remedying injustices. Therefore, it is the absence of resentment in the face of injustice that should be denounced as immoral. There is virtue in resentment, in other words, in the words of Jean Méry, there is virtue in the moral vertigo of resentment that disrupts the moral order and prevents hasty attempts at reconciliation. It is only because of resentment that injustices become a moral reality, and it is only through resentment that an entire community, including perpetrators of injustice, are swept into the truth. These are the words of John Henry. But the question, of course, is which one of these two emotions, or which type of resentment is prevalent today, given the contemporary late modern condition? Is it resentment or is it ressentiment? I think, looking at a sort of, various kind of sources, I think a scholar like Wendy Brown has said some fairly interesting things about precisely the sort of late modern condition and ressentiment. Brown claims, for instance, that the conditions of late modernity, with the expansion of neoliberalism, create the breeding ground for an explosion, not so much of resentment, but of ressentiment. Individuals are starkly accountable, yet dramatically impotent, and quite literally seething with ressentiment. Plus, the failure to acknowledge and respond to protracted grievances causes resentment to fester and escalate into ressentiment. The flattening of relation and the refusal of any verticality makes failures imminent and almost ontological, which of course risks turning issues of justice into a mere envy-generating competition of status. A number of scholars converge in identifying this as an increasingly global condition under the spell of a failed or fake egalitarianism and on the verge of an uncontrollable explosion of ressentiment. A time marked by the proliferation in numbers and intensification in tone of interpretative frames that encourage self-perceptions of victimhood and impotence, which all contribute to make ressentiment even more acute. A time marked by the persistence of moral grievances stemming from failures of justice, which time can transform alchemically into deeply rivalrous forms of ressentiment. So where does this leave us? And what are my conclusions? Obviously, this is a work in progress, and you know, I'll say more perhaps in the questions and answers if you wish. But two conclusions I'd like to sort of point out and stand out in particular for me. The first concerns Girard's mimetic theory. It is very striking, I think, that Girard never engages in as thorough a discussion of resentment as he does of ressentiment. Girard focuses so much on the latter that the former does not figure at all as an emotion. What is missing, in other words, is an account of how legitimate grievances may emerge as something other than the mere operation of envy and mimetic rivalry, but as rather as a result of wounding, traumas, and injustices. And also what is missing is an acknowledgement of the possibility of self-empowerment strategies, including some forms of the use of violence, that do not simply feed the vicious and violent circle of scapegoating. Second conclusion is that I think precisely at a time when powerful environmental stimuli are currently converging to create ressentiment as our sovereign mode of being, I think it is imperative to resist conflating the two, to resist conflating resentment and ressentiment, and instead rescue as much as possible the former from the latter. It is imperative, I think, to reclaim those moral and political emotions that are able to render our wounds once again deeply political rather than just contingent, steering us away from the moral and political morass of late modernity.